From the twisted mind of Makoto Shinkai, director of popular anime, Your Name, Weathering With You, and now, Worms From the Ground. Actually, no, this is Suzume, and it is an awesome anime that is directed by Makoto Shinkai, and we're going to be discussing all about it. We kind of skipped right over Weathering With You, Anthony. Why did we do that?
I don't know. I mean, we can always circle back around and cover
it. It's not like these... Yeah, it's not like you have to watch these in any particular order. Although there is some connective tissue between Weathering With You and Your Name. But this one is kind of standalone. At least, maybe not in themes per se, but the actual world that it inhabits and the story that it tells is definitely a standalone story from Your Name and Weathering With You and any of his other canon. But yeah, so welcome back to Project Geekology. This is episode 75. My name is Dakota, and as always, I'm joined with...
Anthony.
Anthony. He was the guy who made us watch Suzume. So... apologies, or you're welcome.
Hey, if you're a Makoto Shinkai fan, you're gonna like
it. It's such a good movie. It's such a good movie. I'm excited to talk about it. I was watching it. It was the second time I've watched it now, because I watched it once in theaters last year when it came out, and I had seen that in English, and I decided to watch it in English again just to, you know, so that I can kind of watch it in the background a little bit, because I had other things I was doing at the time, but I was just sucked in. It is, like, such a solid movie, and I found some really cool things just, like, in the background of this movie that tell a different story. Like, it tells a bigger story, and I'm really excited to talk about it.
We'll definitely, like, circle back on that.
Yes. But anyway, without getting too far ahead of myself, Anthony, what have you been up to this week, and why hasn't it been X-Men 97?
Why hasn't it been X-Men 97? Well, you know, watching Suzume in preparation for this episode, and honestly catching up on a lot of other anime, like some Solo Leveling. There's another one called Free Run that I started. I think I said that right. But I try to catch up on some of the anime that have been coming out. Like, I don't always watch it like as it's coming out, like the episodes. I might do that for some anime, and then like I'll kind of stop for a little while and then catch up once like all the episodes are out. But did you see, I had sent you that trailer for Kaiju number 8. I knew that that was in your wheelhouse.
Yeah, well, especially nowadays. But I've actually seen that manga before. So I was always drawn to the IP, even though I haven't actually read or watched any of that. And I don't think that it's been an anime before this, right? This is the first time it's being adapted to anime.
Right, right.
Yeah, I watched the trailer for Kaiju number 8. Looks really good. I think we're gonna have to cover that some point down the line. I'd love to, but we should cover more anime in general.
I agree.
The discussion of Suzume, even though it's a film, it's in that vein, and I'm excited to like jump into more of that. So that's a nice stepping stone for that. Have you been watching?
I have been. Well, I told you that I had been also kind of like rewatching some of the older anime. The one that I'm on right now is Neon Genesis Evangelion, and I'm talking about like the older version, not the like Netflix changed one, but
the remaster. Yeah.
Oh, did you see that other? So I also, as on the day of recording, I sent you another trailer, which was for that. Did you see that trailer that I sent you, the release? It's called Marvel Rivals.
Yes, and the trailer came out today, actually.
Yes.
Yeah, Marvel Rivals. I was actually going to ask you about that. I wasn't sure if like you had seen it or not. Have you seen the trailer?
I did.
How similar to this is it to Overwatch?
So it seems like it's definitely taken some roots from Overwatch. I noticed that they have destructible environments in this game.
Yeah. Okay, yes, that's true.
But
that's a little different.
That's what a lot of people are calling it. They're calling it a Marvel version of Overwatch. But the thing is that we honestly don't know much about the game. The game could be, maybe it might take some influences from Overwatch. It could also take influences from games like Smite, or even like the Fallen Battleborn. You know, there's a lot of influence out there that it could take from, but Overwatch is the game that's coming to mind for a lot of people. So it'll be interesting.
It looks like Overwatch.
It does. It looks very similar. The thing is that I don't know. It's probably not going to be first person. It seems like it's going to be third person. So
yeah,
that'll
that's true.
That'll be an interesting dynamic.
I just watching the trailer a couple times, I noticed that Iron Man had a very like Farah feel in terms of, you know, staying up high, blasting people from the sky. You had Doctor Strange creating portals kind of similar to like Symmetra almost. You had the Tracer character, you had the tanks with Hulk and everything. So I could definitely see the comparisons, and
the ice character,
that was the first thing that came to mind.
Which I forgot her name. Yeah. There's the,
like in the Marvel
game. Yeah, there's the ice. It's not Iceman. It's like this K-pop. I forgot her name. But yeah, she's like a K-pop artist, and she has like these ice powers.
Looking at the list, Luna Snow is
Luna Snow. Yeah.
I'm surprised. Yeah, they have big name characters and they have smaller name characters, which I'm happy about.
Yeah.
They also have Penny Parker.
Yes.
Which is
they're trying to cut
a really random
one.
Which is exciting to me because it kind of goes to like Marvel has such a huge lineup of characters that they can choose from.
Dude, there's so many characters. There's a lot of characters out there that, you know, people didn't even know exist, you know? I mean,
so,
there's characters I know.
A buddy of mine.
Rabbit?
A buddy of mine was one of the first people to break the news that Marvel was releasing a game called Marvel Rivals. Mm. Over at the streamer, shout out to Mo, and he was saying that there's a whole bunch of characters that were in previous builds of the game that weren't even announced yet, like Moon Knight. So we're definitely getting more characters down the line in a similar vein to how Overwatch releases new characters. Actually, Overwatch announced a new character today.
Yes.
I don't know if you know that.
Yeah, so Venture was announced a little bit back during BlizzCon. There's Venture, and then we have another one that's coming out called Space Ranger, or at least that's the placement name for that character. But Venture is, like, we've known, they've shown a lot of Venture already. We haven't seen anything about Space Ranger yet, but yes, we got a look at the kit for Venture. This character is going to be interesting because there's a lot of fighting in the sky, but this character brings it underground, you know? And
yeah,
so I'm,
it's a different dynamic.
Right. So I'm wondering how much that's going to shift some of the meta and how this person is going to fit into the mold of Overwatch. I think that there is going to be a trial for that character tomorrow. So I'm going to go and check out character.
It almost seems like it'll be kind of like a Sombra type, sneak attack type person. You know, like you could probably tell when the Venture character is like creeping up on you because you can see the ground moving underneath you. But for the most part, it'll probably be in your peripherals, you know? So that's how I assume the gameplay for other people is going to be. We got to talk a little bit about Overwatch because they had some big news this week. They just dropped the PvE altogether.
Yeah. Well, the thing is that it's almost like it's not really news. Like we
all kind of guessed it.
Well, I mean, a long time ago, they had announced a while back that they're not gonna, that the campaign, it was done. You know, like they weren't gonna do the campaign. Honestly, to tell you the truth, the sorriest excuse for me that they had said for it was that, oh, you know, it was too ambitious, that they wanted it to lead up to an MMO. I'm like, okay, that's not what we're asking for. We just want to be able to expand on the lore, and, you know, that it's just, I don't know, like I just felt like it was almost like a cop out just to throw something out there. And we should have known, honestly, to tell the truth. I feel like the writing was on the wall when they released the PvP, like right off the rip first. They're like, oh yeah, you know, we're just gonna release the PvP now, and then sometime next year, which was supposed to be last year, they were going to release the campaign stuff. And
don't release things that aren't finished, guys.
Right. It was really their way of saying like, hey, you know, we're just gonna give you something for now until we can figure out how to break the news that we're not gonna do this, you know?
Yeah. Anyway, I was disappointed, but I wasn't surprised. Like you said, it was nothing surprising. Blizzard seems to have turned a blind eye to Overwatch, it seems, in recent years. It just doesn't feel like it's been getting the funding that it should, because for a while it was a powerhouse for Blizzard,
which is sad, because it's like, you know, it really, it should be receiving it, because it's a live service game, you know. There's only really, like, what do they have outside of that? I mean, they have WoW, but, you know, for a lot of people, they feel like they're trying to, like, really milk WoW. And I feel like when they come out with new expansions, there's, like, more negative reception than anything. And so, like, now they're trying to rehash it with all of this classic, you know, WoW classic stuff. And I'm just like, dude, at what point do you stop releasing on the classic? Because then it's not going to be classic anymore. You know, it's going to be like, oh, modern era. And that's where, like, I'm a little bit on the fence about Cataclysm Classic, because that's where I feel like the game really shook up. And
yeah, that's where it changed.
That's where it changed. And that's where I feel like the modern version of the game, like, is like from that point and on.
So when they introduced the Burning Crusade expansion, and then the next one went into Northrend, it really felt like the world kept expanding. But with Cataclysm, it felt like it was contracting. You know, like they changed the locations that you already knew, and the entire story shifted to something kind of different. It wasn't bad, but it wasn't the same. Right. And I think the real power of the first three iterations of WoW, you know, you have your basic classic WoW, you have your Burning Crusade, you have Frozen Throne, was that the third one?
Wrath of the Lich King.
Wrath of the Lich King. I'm thinking of Frozen 3. Or Warcraft.
Yeah, yeah, Warcraft 3. Yeah, it's called the Frozen Throne. Yeah, you're right. That's I mean, close enough. It has to deal with the Lich King, so.
Yeah, when it comes to those three, it felt like that is classic WoW, you know? And then you get into the later stuff with Pandaria and all that. But anyway, I don't want to get too deep into that. But yeah, anything else you've been up to gaming-wise, or news that you want to cover, or...
Honestly, no, not really. I mean, I had told you that I was playing, you know, games like Helldivers. I've started messing around with Destiny 2 again. I don't think I'm going to take a deep dive like I did. I'm going to play it a little bit more on the passive side. But there is a game series that I kind of want to go back and play. I knew it existed, but I kind of glossed over it.
Persona?
Yeah, yeah. Like, I'm talking about the first two Persona games. No, the Star Ocean series.
Oh, that's awesome. Yeah, okay. Cool. Have you gone into that, or that's something that you plan to do?
Well, I got the first two. That I've got the... I think it's called First Departure... Yeah, First Departure R, which is like a remake of the first one. And then there's Second Story, which is a remake of the second game. So I got those two. I'm going to obviously play through the first one and the second one. I don't think that you have to. You could safely hop into the second game, because they just released the second game remake. And so, like, I think it's safe that you can hop into that one without playing the first. But I don't know. I kind of want to play the first one.
Nice, cool.
So yeah, not too much, man. You know, I'm in the process of building myself a new rig. You know, I'm just waiting for my case to come in. The case is on back order, but once that comes in a couple of months, then I'll be able to really press forward on that. And I'm pretty excited and pretty stoked. In the time being, I'm trying to upgrade some of my peripherals. I told you I upgraded one of my monitors, so I'm pretty stoked about that. But yeah, no, other than that, nothing too crazy. How about yourself, man? What have you been up to? You just dropped your massive Kong or Godzilla X Kong or Godzilla Kong video.
Yeah, I mean, the X is really confusing to most people, but I'm really excited. I finally got my big MonsterVerse timeline out after 3 grueling months of work. I mean, I really enjoy making stuff like that, so it's hard work. I don't want to say that. But it's not a pain to work on it. It does get to be a pain when the time period that I want to release it in keeps, that window keeps closing, and I keep pushing it back and back because I'm not necessarily finished with what I need to do. Like, originally I wanted to have this out in January. It's almost the end of March, guys. So it turned out to be a lot bigger than I expected, but I'm really happy with the way it came out. And it's not getting insane views or anything, but right now it's performing better than the last 10 videos that I've done. So I'm really happy about that.
Oh, wow, nice.
And it's a longer video, so the actual viewer time is up by quite a bit. Like, the average view time for some of my videos is probably like 7 to 10 minutes. This one's closer to like 17 to 20 minutes. Mm. And I'm happy about that, because that means people are watching more. More ads are going to play, and, you know, I'll get a little kickback. And I don't think it's not going to pay my rent. Unless something crazy happens and like really decides to push this video. But I guess we'll see. It's not impossible that YouTube would do that like after a couple days, because that's actually what happened with my Avatar timeline video. It kind of like started with like a middling result, and then like after the Avatar movie came out, like after a week of it, it just like blew up on YouTube.
Nice.
So hoping something like that happens. Guys, go check it out. It's already in the show notes, so just do it after this. But anyway, now that I've like gotten that out of the way, I can finally like go back to my like normal life of enjoying my regularly scheduled content. I was able to like start, you know, diving back into the One Piece manga. I'm able to watch a couple of shows that I've put off. The one I want to talk about right now is X-Men 97.
Ooh.
The third episode just dropped, and Anthony, I know you're not going to believe this, but I actually believe that this show is better than the original.
Oh, really?
Not only is it a faithful legacy sequel, the dialogue, the writing is superior to the original because it's not geared towards, like, it's a direct follow-up to the events of, you know, what happened in the first five seasons of the animated series.
So do you think that it just grew with the audience?
That's kind of what it feels like, even though it feels like nothing's changed. It's evolved. It's like a next step. It's HD now. It's
like, it looks crispy. Like, the artwork is the same, but yeah, I think we were talking about this. Like, the artwork looks the same, but it's crispy, you know, it's crisp.
It looks really nice.
It looks really good. And you got to thank HD for that. We didn't have HD back in the 90s, you know?
I am so surprised with the level of quality that they exhibit on this show. Third episode blew my mind, dude. It's like a 10 out of 10 animated episode just for anything. I'm really astounded by what they are capable of accomplishing in that medium. And I hope Marvel does more like it, because there's definitely like plenty to mine there, you know? And actually, like, Brad Winterbaum, one of the producers in Marvel, was talking about how like this could open up the doors to other like animated universes, kind of like, you know, they had the Spider-Man show, the Fantastic Four, there was an Iron Man show, there was a Silver Surfer show. I don't think necessarily all of those or any of those are going to happen, but the door's open, and this is definitely like the right step in that direction, and I'm so happy about it.
Nice. That's cool. Yeah, I need to hop onto that. It's, man, I kind of want to rewatch the old one. I don't know if you went back to rewatch it.
I rewatched it right before Multiverse of Madness. Like, I binged because I knew that Professor X was going to be in Multiverse of Madness, and I knew that he would be using like the yellow chair that he had in the X-Men animated series.
Oh, okay.
So in my mind, I was thinking, oh, this is a live action version of that character from that show, even though he, spoiler alert, dies in that show. It turned out it was just a variant of, you know, Professor Charles Xavier. But yeah, so I had rewatched pretty much the entire thing right before Multiverse of Madness came out, just in case I needed to put that show on the MCU timeline when that came out.
Nice.
Dedication to the craft.
Sounds promising, man. I'm excited.
No, it's really good. You definitely gotta check it out. Even just to like listen to that theme song again. It's so good.
It's classic, man.
It is classic. Should we jump into Suzume?
Suzume? Let's do it, man. So it was about time that we got some coverage on another Makoto Shinkai movie. Honestly, to tell you the truth, I think I had heard his name, but I don't think I'd really seen his movies until I saw Your Name some years back. And That movie blew me away so much. So when they announced Suzume, I was like, dude.
When we covered Your Name on the podcast, was that your introduction to Your Name, or had you seen it prior?
No, remember, I hadn't seen it.
Oh, so that was first.
Yeah, that was a first for me and for that movie. Yeah, but yeah, so when Suzume was announced and I saw that it was a movie by Makoto Shinkai, I was like, yeah, like I need to go and see this movie in theaters. And to me, it didn't disappoint. That's a movie that I would not have wanted to miss in the theaters.
That's, yeah, I also saw it in theaters. I also saw Weathering With You in theaters, the pseudo sequel to Your Name. But I have only ever seen Weathering With You once, and this would be the second time I had seen Suzume after seeing it in theaters. But yeah, it was awesome seeing it in theaters when I think it's so special when we get anime releases in America. You know,
yes.
I mean, Miyazaki films are kind of the exception where they'll play for several weeks, but like Suzume wasn't going to play for several weeks. It was going to play for like a weekend, you know, like you had to see it or you'd miss it basically. So yeah, I mean, you saw The Boy and the Heron, right?
I did. Yeah, I saw it.
We gotta talk about that soon. We actually promised you guys a podcast of Boy and the Heron a couple months back, but like that movie kind of needs to be seen multiple times.
I agree. I need to see it
to
again.
Like discuss it.
Yeah, I need to see it again before we cover it, because there's a lot going on in that movie. And
yeah,
I'm actually glad that I got to see, because there was, you know, stuff that I remember from Suzume, but it's also one of those films that you want to see a couple times before you cover it, because this one kind of has a lot going on too.
Yeah, so we start our movie with just this young girl. She's going to school. She's in high school. Suzume Iwato. And she's driving down a hill, and she sees this cute guy, who turns out to be a little older than her, who asks her for directions to some ruins. You know, are there any ruins nearby? And that kind of sets her off on this whole adventure, even though she doesn't even realize it at the time. Like, she doesn't understand, like, why she's got this bug to, you know, follow and check out these ruins for herself.
Right, she's drawn to him. She feels like they've met before.
Yes, and that kind of turns out to be something that's really important, obviously, in the film. Should we mention, I don't know, we don't have to go, like, scene by scene.
Right, of course. We haven't done that in a while.
But I think it's important to mention, like, there's the beautiful introduction of Suzume as a child, like, in the beginning of the movie. And she's, like, wandering through what we now know is the ever after. It's like, where dead people go to live on, basically, past their mortal bodies. And it's a place that's timeless, according to certain characters. That, you know, like, it's past, present, future. It's all happening all at once in the ever after. So we don't really understand what's happening in that opening scene, but it's such a beautiful entrance to the movie, because it does harken back to Your Name, you know, especially with the bright purples and blue and deep blues in the skies. That instantly draws you in, like, oh, this is a Makoto Shinkai film. It looks kind of like the comet that fell in Your Name.
You know? He loves that color combo. Like, you kind of get that a little bit in also in Weathering With You.
Yes, for sure. 100%. Yeah. He likes certain color combinations, and they look good, you know? And it's kind of become a staple of his. I don't think that he should necessarily continue that for every movie, because...
But how are we going to know it's his movie?
I don't know. We'll have to read the cast.
We'll have to read what the director... Dude, really? Are you telling me I have to read the director's name?
Ugh, gross. But yeah, Suzume goes to this ruin, and somehow she gets there before the other guy, who ends up Sota is the other character who basically she sends directions to.
Right. Well, I figured that he's in that place, but he's not, like, he's wandering somewhere else in the ruins.
Yeah, I mean, ruins are usually more than just one complex, so it's understandable that he didn't find it necessarily first.
But, right, it was like an old water park.
Yeah, and Suzume finds it, and she opens up this door that she can immediately see the ever after in, but she's not able to cross into it for whatever reason.
Right, she tries to, but when she steps through it, she just ends up on the other side of the door.
Yeah, it's a really cool effect, actually. Just like the animation there, I love that scene so much. But anyway, she ends up picking up some, like, totem or keystone. Yes, is what they call it. She picks up a keystone, which basically locks the ever after in that location. And when she picks it up, she basically, like, she unlocks it. And now she has to go around closing gates throughout the entire movie.
Yes. Yeah, it's
hard to explain.
Yeah, it really is hard to explain. Like, there's these doorways to the ever after that they have to... They're usually guarded by the keystone, but since Suzume kind of like unleashed the keystone, or like released it from its like hold, the keystone, which is this cat called Daijin, and like he kind of takes off. And so Sota is called a closer, and so his job is to go around and close these doors or make sure that they're closed. And because if he doesn't, then these giant, like, billowy cloud things that he calls worms will come out, and nobody else can see them, but they kind of cause earthquakes. And that is actually a very, very significant part of this film, the whole earthquake thing. And I mean, it's the theme of this film, and you get that especially when you get to the end of the film. But, you know, I'll just say that one of the major themes of this film is the 2011 earthquake that caused the tsunami.
That's what I was gonna bring up, because I looked up, because like when at the end of the movie, when she finds her notes as a kid and she sees that like day blacked out in her like drawings, she has the we know that it's 12 years prior to the present, and on there she has 3/11 written down. I'm like, what the heck happened March 11th, 2010?
So when I watched that in the theater, I instantly felt like I knew it. I was like, 3/11, March 2011. I was like, dude, like when I had seen it, I was like, I think that was when that earthquake happened in Japan. And sure enough, I looked it up and I was like, oh my gosh. Like I said, dude, this movie is heavily influenced by that earthquake.
It's not even just that earthquake. It's also influenced by, like, so remember there's a point where he said that, like, the worm in Tokyo about 100 years ago came down on the Kanto region.
Did it harm any Pokemon?
Many Pokemon. No, so he basically said that, like, on the Kanto region of Japan, like, that worm came down on them. And that's, like, a legitimate, that's, like, the worst earthquake in Japanese history, like probably close to, so I'm looking at now, casualties 105,000 to 142,000 deaths from that earthquake in September 1st, 1923, which was exactly 100 years before movie, basically. So the idea that these earthquakes are baked in, or that these worms and the ever after is baked into the bedrock of Japan, basically. And, you know, as soon as, like, a gate opens, everyone gets an alert. You know, everyone gets a seismograph, like, warning that, you know, earthquakes are about to
happen. Right, and there's just something so eerie about that. Like, when you hear it going
off. Oh, it's so... Yeah. I mean, I've seen streams of people in Japan where, like, they're live streaming, whatever, and then all of a sudden, like, they have that, and they're like, oh, earthquake's about to happen, and then they have to run for cover, you know? Like, it's crazy. Like, it happens often there, and that's why this movie is so interesting and cool, because they use that real world phenomenon that they all collectively experience and the fear of that warning system to kind of elevate what happens if these closers make a mistake, if they fail to actually close the gate before the worm collapses. So yeah, that I thought it's such a cool concept. It's really genius.
There's such deep emotion that's embedded into this film and the other films, because, you know, like, he really does have something that he wants to tell that connects to the real world in some way. Like, I would say that Weathering With You is pretty much it's a story on climate change, you know? And
yeah, absolutely.
And Suzume, or Your Name, it's kind of like star-crossed lovers, but it also has a disaster that is tangled within it. I don't know what disaster that Your Name is connected to, but I know for a fact that Suzume is definitely... I mean, it's cool that you're talking about the earthquake that happened 100 years prior, because I definitely, like, see, I didn't catch that, but I definitely caught the 2011 earthquake. And even the region that she goes to looks very similar. Like, towards the end of the film, the region that she goes to looks like that region that was affected by the tsunami.
Yeah, so I'm sure we've all seen those videos of, like, the storm surge, like, coming in.
Yes.
And, you know, like, the boats just being washed over the roads and stuff. And you actually see there's a pretty striking visual in Suzume of a boat atop a building. And that's what got me thinking, like, what kind of earthquake would bring a boat on top of a building? And then I was like, oh...
An earthquake
that brings water.
Yes, that would cause a tsunami. So something off the coast. So it was like the land wasn't exactly directly affected by the earthquake.
I think it was off the coast.
It was off the coast, but I think it did affect the nuclear power plant. I think it caused a crack or something.
Oh, that was a crazy thing, because it could have been so much worse.
But what made it really bad was the tsunami. That's what made the situation so much worse. And it caused that whole nuclear meltdown over there. But it's crazy because there's people that are living in that region, or they're trying to get people to move back into that area.
Like, well, I mean, humans have gotten pretty good at determining what levels of radiation are acceptable and what levels of radiation we can kind of, like, pass through our body and out. And also they've gotten really good at, like, it's something that they've, like, started to do in areas affected by, like, that area in Japan, where they remove the topsoil layer where most of the radiation settles from pretty much the entire area, all the affected miles. They just remove, like, the first couple inches of topsoil, and that kind of clears almost everything. So
well, I think about 10 years ago, they had people going, or I don't know if it was 10 years ago, maybe a little less, but you know, there's people who like take tours into that area and they'll have Geiger counters.
Oh yeah. So Fukushima, the town of Fukushima is actually still pretty heavily radioactive. Fukushima is where the actual nuclear plant basically went into what's it called? It's like a meltdown.
Yes.
Yeah, it went into nuclear.
Yeah, meltdown. Yeah, that's what they call it. But it's crazy because they're trying to get people to move into those areas that are still, there's still pretty decent high levels of radiation.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I mean, they don't even have people, like nobody's going to move in Chernobyl. And Chernobyl, like they was even...
Oh, Chernobyl was much worse. Chernobyl was much worse.
Well, yeah, Chernobyl was much worse. But like this one, it was more recent. But if it wasn't as worse as Chernobyl, it was kind of getting there. Because remember, we had the tsunami and that carried a lot of... You had some radioactive seawater going on, you know?
Yeah.
Because I watched oh my gosh, dude, I remember what the... There was some show... And it was essentially like, because I've seen that show, Chernobyl, which fantastic show.
Dude, we should cover that because that's such a good show.
Such a good show. But there's a version of that, a Japanese version of that, and it covers that.
The Fukushima disaster?
Oh, yeah. I don't remember if it was on Netflix or if it was on Max. But yeah. So, but I know that we kind of digressed into... We digress into disasters, but it's very relevant to this story because that is such a huge central focal point, because Suzume is living with her aunt, and there's a reason why she's living with her aunt because of this disaster.
Yeah, it's the disaster that took her mother from her, and it's that disaster that had her as a kid wander back into the village, find the door to the ever after, and actually walk through it. Like, she was capable of walking through it as a kid, and you know, she has these memories of where she, you know, she thinks that she's, you know, seeing her mother again and all that. So it's a really powerful memory, and that memory is what allows her to see the ever after in doors as an adult, or an almost adult, you know, she's a teenager at this point. But let's talk a little bit about Sota and what he becomes, because like
it's
a little ridiculous, but it's also like
so anime,
kind of cool how they animate it. Yeah, it's so animated, so anime, but yeah, like the way that they animated it. So all right, so Sota is coming back to Suzume's place. He's gonna be bandaged up. He's a little cut up from closing the door to the ever after. And Daijin comes. It's like this little cat that can talk, and super cute at first, and then just like Daijin goes, "You're in the way."
Right. Daijin likes Suzume, but then he looks over at Sota and turns him into a chair.
Which is crazy.
Yes, it's...
And
but I like the animation of that. It's really, really cool because, like, it flashes. Like, you don't see him turning into a chair. It's a cut, but he vanishes within that cut. And then you just see the chair fall over, and then it's him. It's really cool. I like the way that they did that moment.
That it was a really special way that they were able to capture that, because they could have just shown him in the chair and then him disappearing in the chair, but the way that they cut it gave it weight.
Absolutely. And then chair, it was a really
chair
good cut.
Fell back. Yeah, so that's interesting. But for the pretty much the majority of the movie at that point, he becomes a sentient chair, a three-legged chair who is trying to catch Daijin and help Suzume close gates as they move their way up Japan to Suzume's hometown, basically.
Yes. Well, so the chair is significant too, because it's a three-legged chair. Like, she at some point Suzume had lost the leg on this chair, but it was a chair that her mother had made in her childhood. It's a small chair. And so, you know, people all over the place are like getting photos of this running chair, and also Daijin is becoming viral. Like, everybody's taking pictures of him because he's just like everywhere. And
I looked up what Daijin means, because I feel like that had Suzume say something like, well, he does have a look, after seeing that people were calling him Daishin. And I looked it up, and it's like a Japanese minister, like an ancient minister, for whatever reason. Like, not necessarily like a religious minister, but like a government minister, you know? And then later, the Sadaijin, which is like the large black cat that we see, it's the other keystone, that Sadaijin means the senior minister of state. So I just think that that's an interesting choice. It's kind of like they're in control, you know, of what happens. And that's kind of like how Suzume kind of realizes that they're basically gods, you know, in this mythology. So I thought that that was pretty fascinating.
Right. And, you know, we get to a point where, and I think it's, they're in Tokyo, right? And this like whole like massive worm comes out of the door.
Yeah, that was in Tokyo, yeah.
And, you know, that's insane. Like, that moment, it's like, you're thinking that you're towards the end of the film. I mean, obviously, when you're watching it in streaming, you know that, I mean, if you check the time bar, you know that that's not the end of the film. But I remember seeing this in the theater, and I'm like, wow, you know, this is crazy. But then, like, that's, like, maybe a little bit...
Halfway.
Yeah, like, about half...
Yeah, it's, like, halfway through.
It's halfway through, and you're just like, man, like, what is going on? And so, Sota becomes a keystone in that moment.
Yeah, the pacing of this movie is really interesting. Because the first half is really energetic. It's kind of nonstop. There are moments of respite where you have Suzume, you know, spending time with locals in different areas.
Right.
You have her.
That was cool. I like that.
Yeah. I really liked her getting to be free almost. You know, like she's coming into herself by these interactions that she's meeting with other people. But after that point in Tokyo, when that huge worm comes out, and basically, like, she realizes that Sota needs to become the keystone, or else Tokyo, you know, millions of people will probably die. Because the Kanto region back in the 1920s, Tokyo was big, but, like, nowadays, Tokyo is the most populous city on the planet. It is massive. There is no bigger city in the world than Tokyo. So, like, millions of people would have died had she not done something.
Right.
And basically, from that point, the story shifts. So it's almost like there was kind of like a three-act structure in the first half, in a way. And then the story shifts to, like, her trying to figure out a way to save Sota. But you mentioned the chair, and I want to talk about the chair a little bit. Like, the actual significance of the chair. Because we have a flashback of the mother carving the chair, putting it together. She's capable of making really cool things, honestly. It's a nice-looking chair. And then we find out later in the film, at the end, that it's Suzume who gave younger Suzume that very same chair that she is now giving to younger Suzume. You know, it's cyclical. How old is that chair?
That's a good question.
How old is that chair? Because, like, if it's cyclical, but the only thing that's not cyclical is the chair itself, because it's being passed through time.
It's just looping.
So my theory is the chair's stupid old. I think the chair is, like, really dumb old. And it probably lost one of its legs, like, a while ago. You know, like in another loop of whatever is going on, you know, like maybe there was a time period when the chair had four legs and Sota was, you know, like put into that and he had four legs and everything. But like now it has three legs because something happened in that time loop, basically, before Suzume had to give the chair back to younger Suzume. You know, it's crazy. Like, where's the original chair? Where did the original chair go, guys?
You know, Makoto Shinkai really loves his time stories.
Dude, he loves them. He loves them. I was tripping out over that last night. I was like, what the heck? How? Where is the original chair? Because, like, if she got the chair from older Suzume, what happened to the chair that was given to her by her mother? I'm so confused. Yeah, like, there's no answer to it.
Where is the chair? we're gonna start a thread on Twitter, hashtag where is the original chair. Dude, that's gonna be when this podcast episode releases, that's gonna be one of the hashtags. Where is the original chair? We're gonna see that and be like, what are you talking about?
Nobody, only I'm sure like a couple people have thought the same thing, but like I'm sure most people watching this did not like think about it that thoroughly. But yeah, it's such a good movie. I love every second of it. I really like the side characters that they introduce that help Suzume and Sota along the way.
You're talking Suzume. About the girl with the oranges and the mom with the two kids that she like ends up babysitting, and the friend of Sota, and then you get her aunt too.
And the aunt as well, yeah. Like, all these characters actively want Suzume and Sota to succeed in whatever their plight is. They don't even know what's going on.
Right, seriously. You know? Like, it's so funny because they're like, you know, I don't know what it is, but I feel like what you're doing is important.
Yeah, and it's kind of funny. Like, that is a feeling you might get sometimes. You know, like, this person's probably doing something kind of important, you know, like I feel like every now and then you get that notion from someone, so I can appreciate that. And then, but that is also kind of a trait for Shinkai films, you know, like that's a big part of Your Name. There are several characters in Your Name that help the main, you know, like Taki and, oh my gosh, I forget the girl's name. But anyway, the two main characters of, I forget that. Anyway, I've seen Your Name so many times, I can't believe I forgot the the girl's name. But anyway, there's so many characters that help them along the way, even though they don't understand why they're helping them or what their end goal is, or, you know, if, you know, this girl doesn't exist anymore because that's from a time period long ago or whatever. Stuff like that kind of is a staple of Shinkai's work at this point. I forget how much of that there is in, but I know that both of those characters, I don't want to spoil Weather With You, but anyway, similar stuff happens in Weather With You with that. But anyway, that's a thing that I really appreciate within Shinkai's work.
I agree.
Just like the selfless friend, you know, like someone who helps someone selflessly, you know, like they don't really expect anything in return. And that's not something you see a lot of these days.
I agree. I really do enjoy there's just something different about his films, you know, and I think that that's what I really like about anime in general, is that like sometimes you don't know what to expect. There is a lot of similar recurring themes, especially when it comes to the shows, but when it comes to original IPs and stuff, like stuff out of Studio Ghibli or Makoto Shinkai and some of these other ones, like the one that I was telling you that I really like, A Silent Voice. There's really interesting stories that are told in these films, you know? And Makoto Shinkai really has like an interesting mind, because it's like, dude, how did you think about this? How did you come up with this and incorporate something real life into it, you know?
Yeah, it's really impressive. And I think part of it, and part of my love of anime, is that they take the mundane, or they allow the mundane to influence them in little ways. And I know Miyazaki's really big on that, you know, like the mannerisms of how people interact with objects. He studies that, you know, he studies how people hold a cup, how people draw water, how people eat food, or how people move when they're on a horse or something like that. And that all comes alive in his animation. With Makoto Shinkai, I think he's introducing more modern day concepts into his movies that, you know, Miyazaki may not care to tell, but he's using those real world elements, like the phones that alert when earthquakes are around, you know, like that's a very modern thing, but that's something that you can make a story around, you know. I think, did you ever finish Monarch, Legacy of Monsters?
I think I have a couple more episodes.
Well, you saw the first episode. So they had the Godzilla siren, yes, in Japan, and there are other countries that have similar sirens to, like, it's a Titan alert system, basically. And it's kind of that same concept that Japan has had for years now of, you know, like, they have actually alerts not only for earthquakes, but they also have it for, like, nuclear arms that have been released. Like, there was one where, I might be thinking about Hawaii. Anyway, I don't know. But anyway, that idea of being an alert system that immediately tells the entire populace is something that is kind of very Japanese, because we don't really have that in the States.
Yeah, you know? We don't.
Like, if something happens, we're left to our own devices. I'll have to feel the earthquake, or I have to, you know, learn about it in, you know, on Twitter later.
Seriously, like, oh, the building's shaking. Like, there's no alert system. Like, what are y'all doing? I mean, especially, like, in California, like, why? Like, why not?
what's funny about California is that, like, because I lived there for a couple of years, I only felt two earthquakes while I was there. One was really minor, like early in the morning. I decided to get up early for school and play a little while before I left. I was a little nerd back then.
Remember we used to wake up at 5 a.m. to play that?
Yeah, that was one of those days.
We're insane.
Anyway, so we were absolute maniacs. There was one where I thought like a truck had like been like slammed into something outside. I was like, what was that? Turned out it was a small earthquake. And then I felt one like the week before I left. And I remember I was on the phone with my buddy. And he goes, dude, you feel that? It's an earthquake. I'm just like, what are you talking about? He's just like, I'm on my bed. I'm riding it like a surfboard. and like, sure enough, like 5 seconds later, I felt it. And it's just like, that was a real earthquake. It was probably maybe like magnitude 3 or 4. Maybe not even
that. Well, it was enough to be felt. I think, and you know what's crazy was that I think when I was over there to visit, you're like, oh, hey, there was an earthquake. And I was like, I didn't feel anything. I think it was low.
Yeah, it probably was. But one thing that happens in an earthquake, at least in, you know, the States, is that like the phone companies turn the power lines off. Like they just cut them. Like nobody can make a call, nothing, because instantly it gets flooded. Like, hey, are you okay? Oh my gosh, did you feel that? Oh my gosh, the servers get so like blocked up that they just shut it off. It's cool that in Japan that doesn't necessarily happen, or if it does happen, they also have like an alert system, like, hey, you know, find shelter, you know. So we keep diving into like
but it's the thing is that, like, I mean, I get what you're talking about, but it's embedded into this film. Yeah. Because you hear that alert system go off a few times throughout this film.
Yeah, it's interesting. There's always like a preliminary earthquake thing that goes off when the gate opens. And then there's the actual quake when the worm falls. Like, if the worm falls, like, it's a really bad quake.
Yes, yes. We didn't even talk about, like, it was interesting, the location of the doors and the requirement to, like, what they need to do to close these doors.
Yeah, talk about it.
I thought it was really cool because it's, these doors were all located in the ruins of a place or in an abandoned place. And the way to close these doors is that Suzume and Sota have to think and visualize about the people who lived there and spent, like, you know, just day-to-day life in these places. And they had to do this stuff to be able to close the door. And there's that thing that they would say as they would close the door.
Yeah, it was something like divine gods, something, something, let them, take them back or something, or you can have them. Basically, like, saying, like, you can have the souls of whatever, or the people that were lost here or something like that. And I thought that was just a fascinating way to handle that. And what's cool about being a closer is that, like, nobody knows this job exists. It's not like a job that pays. It's something that you just, it's just like passed down family to family. So like Sota, he wants to be a school teacher. He wants like to have a normal life, but he's also kind of in this family lineage of, you know, like, well, my grandfather was a vampire hunter, so now I have to be a vampire hunter. It's kind of like that, you know?
Right, but it's, you know, it's an ancestral thing, but
a worm slayer.
It's crazy. Yeah, that first door was in the ruins of that water park. And then you have that other one that is in like an abandoned school, and there was that one
in the amusement park.
Door, but the door was in one of the cars of the Ferris wheel, and so like
it was fascinating.
It's Suzume is in it and it's going up, and so I'm like, dude, this is crazy, you know. And she steps in and she kind of gets like mesmerized because she's in
the ever after. Yes. Like she sees basically like what she remembered seeing in the ever after, and she's kind of like entranced by it. She walks into the carriage or the car that has the door that's bringing all this worm out, and for whatever reason the power comes back on. And I have a feeling it was just kind of like the energy that was being released, you know, brought the amusement park back to life temporarily, because there's no reason otherwise why the power would still even be like operational.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
It should be cut off from the source. But yeah, I thought that was such a cool, just visual, dude. That scene is worth the entire price of admission.
It really is.
And then that's where you probably get the best like animation of the chair itself as it's running up and down like the roller coaster arms chasing Daijin and everything. Dude, it's so good. So good. Let's talk a little bit about Daijin before we close out. It's a character that like you're terrified of because it's freaky, but also like you feel bad for because it's something that clearly wants to be accepted. You know, like the first thing it says to Suzume is that like something like love Suzume or Suzume loves me or something like that. Yeah, and later on down the line, after the events transpire in Tokyo where Sota has to become the new Keystone, she grabs Daijin and she's, you know, like Daijin's like, Suzume, no, it hurts. And I feel so bad for it because like clearly it doesn't want, you know, Suzume to hate her, but like Suzume hates her.
Yeah.
Or him. I don't know if it's him or her. Yeah. Yeah. So solid. And that scene's hard to watch as a pet owner. You know, I have a cat.
As a cat owner.
As a cat owner, as an animal lover, you know, like seeing animals like dejected like that, oh, it hurts. And like the way that it kind of like shrivels up, like without the love of Suzume, it killed me.
Right. It gets smaller.
Yeah, it shrinks back to like before Suzume fed her, basically. Like, remember
the first time they see Daijin?
She's like, yeah. So let's talk a little bit about Daijin also. Like, it's the other Keystone cat that like pops up when the aunt is traveling with them to go to Suzume's hometown, and there's that really creepy scene where like she basically like regurgitates the darkest thoughts that she's ever had towards Suzume, and in a really cruel way.
Right, right, like intrusive thoughts were much coming out.
Yeah. The thoughts you never want to actually like she expressed. And it's basically like she was being influenced by this spirit, basically. And it's a really creepy scene, but she kind of regains her consciousness and realizes what she said, and she freaks out. You know, imagine like saying something like so terrible to someone you love and then realizing like, oh, I wasn't in my, you know, like right mind. Why would I ever say something like that?
Right. But yeah, it was almost like when you are like in a deep emotional like kind of upset state and you just say stuff to
her.
Right.
Yeah.
I saw your Daijin walking around in the background.
My gato, my male gato, my very male.
Your keystone.
Under. He's got a couple keystones, that's for sure. let's close this up. I really like the relationship that the aunt and Suzume have with each other, and I want to just comment on the fact that she admitted, like, yeah, these are real thoughts. You know, like I've thought that on occasion, but more often than not, I've thought about other things, you know, like how happy I am to have you in my life and all that. Super positive message, and I love that about the film.
Right. And then in the end, Suzume saves Sota from the life of being a keystone and a chair.
With the power of love. Suzume earns the power of love. Guys, go check this movie out if you haven't already. Suzume is incredible. It's streaming on Crunchyroll, and it is one of the best anime movies that have come out in the past couple years. Definitely check it out.
Absolutely, I agree.
You guys can check us out on our socials in the show notes down below. You can follow us on Pig Ecology at Twitter and Project Ecology at Instagram. Or you can follow our individual handles, whatever. It's going to be linked down there. Thanks so much for listening to us for our 75th episode. Anthony, I don't think we've decided what we're doing next week. What are we doing? We're going to do Lilo and Stitch?
I haven't seen Lilo and Stitch in a long time. That would be an interesting movie to go back to.
You down?
Yeah, I'm down.
Let's do it. Guys, next week we're doing Lilo and Stitch. You heard it here first. Your boys are going back to our childhood.
Yes, we are.
All right, guys. Thank you so much. Don't be a chair.
Bye.
Adios.